The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I said last week that we'd start this week exploring the topic of not self over a series of days, series of the coming weeks. As I said last time, when I started thinking about this, especially in the form that we're doing here, we have about half an hour together right now, and I'd like there to be some dialogue. So I'm thinking of offering a small piece, a short teaching, and it'll be progressive over the weeks, a short teaching, and then have a discussion. So that's how it'll unfold each week. So this evening, since it's the first week, I wanted to just start with a kind of a basic overview or kind of a sense of the topic itself. What is this teaching of not self? The sense of self seems so obvious in many ways. It's like it's something we don't even question until something like the teachings of the Buddha come along and say, basically what the teaching of the Buddha are saying is like what we take to be self isn't what we think it is. A lot of times people take this teaching to be something like there is no self. And my understanding is, the translation that Thanissaro Bhikkhu uses of not self, I like, because basically it points to what we think of self is not what we think it is. So not self to me is a better way in for us. There's something going on here. There's something happening. My thoughts, you can't know what my thoughts are. You don't know what I did this afternoon. I have some sense of continuity of my experience. And it doesn't seem like it's necessarily, interwoven with somebody else's experience, except when I come into contact with other people. So it feels like there's something here, right? And we mostly just go about assuming that sense that we have. There's kind of a sense. It feels very, obvious in a way that there's something that's enduring in our experience. That we have a sense of remembering. I think memory plays a big role in this, the sense that we remember things from yesterday, last week, when we were 5 years old. So what is it that remembers? It feels like I remember. It feels like there's something here, something enduring here. But that sense of what's enduring, actually, we don't question it much. We don't look at it much. It's just, it seems so obvious that it's there, that it's true, that we don't think to explore. What is that? What is it that we're taking to be self? And that's a question we'll come back to later and probably come back to several times through this series. What is it that we take to be self? There's a lot of different things that we actually take to be self. And we tend to kind of put them all into a pot and think they're all the same thing somehow. So what is it that we take to be self? We don't typically actually explore that in much depth or in much detail. I'm reminded, I think it was a mathematician. I can't remember which one. It might be Alfred North Whitehead, who said, "It takes a very unusual mind to undertake the analysis of the obvious." And that's what I think the Buddha did. He undertook the analysis of this obvious sense of self and what is this process? And undertook an analysis of suffering and came up with, understood things in a very different way through the exploration. So the proposal is that what we take to be self is not a stable thing. It's not an enduring thing. But there is something here we experience. But that what we think of as a thing or as a stable entity is a process, not something stable and enduring. So some examples of some ways of understanding this. And I think analogy can be helpful here. So two analogies I'll offer about this. So what is a river? Now, if you think of a river, we know we can name the river, we know where it is, we can go to it, we can, you know, it's like we can talk about it conventionally. So there's something there that's a river. And we all know what we mean by river. But when we actually kind of begin to analyze what river is, there's nothing in river that is stable. The water that's flowing through the river, we know that's not stable. That's, you know, every time you stick your hand in the water, there's different water there. So, and you can't just take a bucket of water out of the river and say, that's the river. The river is something more. It's more, you know, it's more of a process. It's a flowing. The river is a flowing. Well, we might say, well, what about the riverbed? That kind of forms some kind of channel, which creates a little bit more stability for the river. But that too is being washed downstream. All of the, you know, it's not changing. Every time as the water flows, it's also washing the riverbed downstream. And if there's a major flood or something, the entire riverbed, the course of the river can actually get altered or shifted. So that's not stable either. There's some parts of it that seem more stable than others. And that's true of our own sense of self as well. In some ways, you know, our body has some stability. You know, there's a kind of a sense of our body having that. It's kind of like the riverbed. But we know that it's changing. You know, there's these descriptions of the cells of our body changing over every 7 or 10 years or something. I don't know if that's true of the neurons, but in any case, there's a kind of a sense of there being a stability of the body. But we know our body isn't completely permanent. Our body is going to go away. We don't usually think of ourselves. I mean, we see people when they die. The body is there. But it's like they're not there. So what we think of as self, when we're confronted with that kind of a situation, we know the self is not the same as the body. So we can begin to analyze and understand a little bit in this way, the, you know, what is it? What is it that we take to be self? So another analogy that I like to explore around the sense of self or as a way in perhaps to understanding the sense of self as a process is the analogy of a rainbow. So with a rainbow, you've got a bunch of different things coming together. A rainbow itself is pretty ephemeral. You know, we know that it's put together based on conditions of, you know, the location of the sun, where there's the water in the atmosphere, if there's, you know, if it's been rain, and we've got to have all of these things in kind of the right positions. We need the water in the sky, and we need the sun in a particular orientation in connection with that. The water in the sky, and then we need an observer in a particular orientation to those things as well. So there's one time I was in Oregon doing a self-retreat on the coast, and it was a really stormy day, or it had been a stormy day, so there was a lot of very high waves. And the waves were breaking, and the mist was spewing way high up into the sky. I was on a cliff that was 75 feet up, and the waves were breaking, and the water, the mist from the waves was going way above the cliffs. And I was standing in a particular location, and you know, I would sit there, and at one particular spot on the trail, I stopped, and as I watched these waves break and the mist come into the air, I would see a rainbow. The rainbow would be revealed as the mist kind of floated into the air, and then it would disappear as the mist dropped. And it was kind of funny because it almost looked like the rainbow was there. You know, it stayed in the same place. And then as the mist came through, there it was. I could see it kind of pop into view. So this is the experience of a rainbow. You know, it is something. We can see it. We can even take pictures of rainbows. You know, I didn't think we could take pictures of rainbows when I was a kid because I thought they were so ephemeral. But that, you know, they're a phenomenon. We can document them. You know, it's not nothing. It's got some kind of reality, but it is so ephemeral, and it is dependent on conditions coming together. Those conditions arise together, and the rainbow can be seen. That's kind of points to the conditioned nature of the sense of self. There is something that we experience that we call self. There is you know, these conditions arising, the sense of, you know, the body, the mind. But what happens, I think, is that we fundamentally misinterpret that experience as being something stable. It was kind of like, you know, that rainbow experience I had. It almost was like you would think that the rainbow is there. It kind of looked like it was there, and just like as the mist washed through, that I could now see it. So it's almost like I could pretend, or my mind could say, oh, it's there. It's just waiting to be like the curtain to be drawn back so that it could be seen. And so there's kind of a sense in which we impute or attribute, because of the nature of the changing process and the sense of that stability, we impute an enduring nature to it, which isn't there. So coming back to the question, you know, what do we take to be self? Let's explore this a little bit. And I'd like to continue the recording for the conversation part of these evenings. I hope that's okay with you. If it's not okay for you to record your voice, you're welcome to type something into the chat box. And I can read it out if that's more comfortable for you. So what I want to hear from you, first of all, is what is it that you take to be self? What do you think when you think of who I am? What comes up for you? Because I think it's important. This is an important question, because if we don't have a sense of what we take to be self, then we can't undertake the analysis of the obvious. We need to have something to explore. And so that's what I'd like to pull from you right now. So what is it that feels like a sense of self for you? Yeah, Maureen. You're muted.
I'm on my iPad right now.
Okay.
I'm related. Memories.
Yeah, memories are a big one, I think, because, you know, it's like that kind of proves that I was here and I'm, you know, and there's something that's kind of coming through. So yeah, that's a big one. So what else? Others? You know, just, you know, unmute yourselves and jump in. Yeah.
Personality characteristics.
Personality characteristics. So say more. What do you mean by that?
Sense of humor. A sense of curiosity.
So traits that kind of seem like who I am.
Yes.
Others.
How about patterns?
Patterns?
Patterns, yeah.
What kind of patterns are you referring to?
Well, I react to, you know, certain situations, certain ways. they arise, my reactions to certain things.
Yeah, okay, so like the kind of the habitual ways that we respond. This is how I am. This is what I do in this situation. Yes. Uh-huh.
Yes.
How I respond. Other thoughts? Andrea?
I know when I look in the mirror sometimes, it seems like I'm looking in the same set of eyes that I've seen since I was a kid. Like I can still see the 18-year-old or the whatever there.
So is that connected to body or is it something else?
Other features can change, but it seems like the eyes have some level of consistency, or I don't know what it is, but it's the weirdest thing that I notice about that.
It's kind of like you feel continuity. Like you're looking at the same person.
Yeah.
That's actually really interesting because I think that there's some truth there. It's like something about who we are kind of comes out of our face, our expressions. And I notice that with others when I see somebody, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, I look at them and I see, yeah, I recognize that person. I know who that is. So yeah, there's some kind of consistency there in the eyes or in the face. Yeah. And somebody just typed in, now that I have some knowledge of who I am, I'm starting to believe that I am that which is aware of awareness. So, Sangeeta says she's having some audio problems, so she'll use the chat box. So I think that's true, that actually, as we start to observe our experience a little bit more, this coming back into being aware, that becomes a place, that's a place of like, well, if that's not me, you know, that what else could that be? You know, that there seems to be a real almost like stability. It's like, it feels like reliable in a way that there's this awareness here. So yes, that's another big one. Sometimes, you know, the consciousness of the sense of being, being aware itself can feel like a sense of self. Other things, other, yeah, Raj.
I guess for me, it's what I am in like relationships.
In relationships. That's huge. Like the identities we have in relationships, like parent, child, sibling, right. Coworker, right. You know, those kinds of things. So all of those relationships, we have identities around them. That's really interesting. Right. That one, I think, you know, for me, that's a really interesting one to explore, because as I started to really look at those, I began to notice there's no relationship between them often. Right. You know, like who I am as a daughter is nothing to do with who I am as a teacher. They're right. So different. So right. Yeah, and that they are also so interesting because they're kind of constructed in relationship. So that's a really good one that we can start to see the conditioned nature, those relationship pieces. We can start to see the conditioned nature of those, you know, because they arise in dependence on the relationship. They could arise in dependence on the thought. I notice sometimes I'm sitting at a retreat and the thought of my mom comes up and it's like, well, there's the daughter, you know, so, you know, those kinds of things. So to start to see that. You know, actually, that's part of what I wanted to get to here is that we can, you know, kind of identifying some of these things, these places. So personality characteristics, patterns, how I respond, you know, the memories, you know, that we can begin to look at those and see where is the sense of self or what is the sense of self that arises in relationship to that. And as we start to see, you know, that the sense of, you know, being a daughter or being a child, you know, is arising, that it wasn't there a few moments ago, we can see it's not stable. We can start to see the instability. And likewise with the you know, personality characteristics and patterns, how I respond, we can begin to see those too as conditioned. That can take a little bit more exploration at times, to see, because those are pretty deeply conditioned. Some of the personality characteristics, the patterns, the habits, the pattern for me of self-hatred was hugely stable for so long. It wasn't always there. And yet I began to see, and this is a useful thing in terms of exploring kind of the process nature or the, you know, the not enduring nature of these things. I began to notice that the reason I thought that like self-hatred was enduring is because if it wasn't happening, I was telling myself the story, you know, that, but really what's going on is that, you know, I don't like myself, or I'm a failure. That's really what's going on here. Yeah, I'm doing this right, but really what I am is a failure. And instead of recognizing that this is a condition that arises based on, you know, this is a sense that arises based on conditions that come together, and it falls apart when conditions change. So this is, I think all of these that you've mentioned are really interesting to look at and explore. So this is a piece that we'll get to a little bit further on in the series, essentially, like, what does it mean to explore the sense of self? Because that's actually how we begin to understand the teaching of not self. Dogen, a Zen master, had a famous quote. Many of you have probably heard the famous Zen quote, to study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be awakened by all things. And to me, this really kind of encapsulates that, you know, that what we do with this assumption of self is not that we try to somehow get rid of it, try to not have this experience of being the angry one, or the one, you know, the one with self-hatred, or the one who relates this way in this situation. Not trying to get rid of that, but to understand it, to study it, to be curious about it. So studying the sense of self isn't trying to get rid of the self. It's trying to understand how the sense of self functions, not being deceived by it, taking it to be something that it's not. And understanding, I think this too is important, understanding ways in which, and we could say too, as we start to explore the sense of self, is we start to see we have many senses of self. There's lots of identities, lots of ways, things and experiences that we take to be self. And then somehow we kind of put it all into one big pot and say, that's who I am. It's like somehow my being, you know, this person when I'm a friend and this person when I'm a daughter, I kind of just assume they're somehow connected. You know, so it kind of all goes into the same pot. So these processes kind of confuse us or delude us into thinking there's stability. So we're not trying to get rid of this sense of self. We're trying to understand it. And in the process, we can also kind of see or recognize ways in which, for instance, identities, you know, identities I think are connected very much with what Raj pointed out, the relationships, social identities, some of these identities serve us at times. Like, it's really useful for me to be the daughter and not the teacher when I go home and visit my parents. You know, if I come home and I'm the teacher, you know, that doesn't go over so well. So you know, when do these processes serve us, and when do they confuse us? And to begin to tease that apart. And in the process, we begin to stop kind of holding on to the identities. That's another thing, I think, when we assume ourselves to be a certain thing, you know, I am this kind of person who responds in this kind of way, then that becomes a self-reinforcing prophecy. You know, that's like we've reified ourselves as this thing, and we don't give ourselves credit for being able to change or do something different. So that's a way in which those identities or that sense of self kind of congeals us into a particular habit. And yet it's just habit at work. So I want to also, let's see, there's not a lot of time left, so I want to check in. I'll name a few more ways that I see, and important ways that I see that we tend to assume a sense of self. One big one is kind of the one who decides, the one who chooses what to do. It's like that sense of control, or the sense of I can make something happen. That's a very strong place of identification. Another one is, and this is connected to the what one of you said in the chat box, you know, some knowledge of I am that which is aware. There's a kind of a sense of I may know that, or have a sense that, yeah, I'm not completely in control of things. So that sense of control might fall away at times, but it sure feels like things are happening to me. You know, so that there's another part of the sense of self that's the one who experiences, the one who feels. It's like that side of things is also a deeper kind of feeling that is connected to the sense of self. So we'll go through these pieces and begin to unpack them over the course of these weeks on this topic. But I also want to just check in and see, so I can hopefully speak to you. What are your questions about not self? And again, you're welcome to put them in the chat box. You're welcome to speak them out, or you're also welcome over the course of the week if things come up. I put in the event description a link to a question form, so you could submit questions in between. If you come up with anything during the course of the week, it's like, oh, what about this with respect to the sense of self? Send those things in so that I can be responding to you. So do you have anything now in particular that you're curious about with respect to? Yeah, Rob.
I think in a life or death situation, we want to save someone.
I missed something. So you said in a life or death situation, we want to,
if we need to save our life.
Oh, to save. Yeah.
To do something, we need to save someone.
Okay, so that's a great. I won't try responding right now. I just want to take questions in, but I'll write it down. So in a life or death situation, there's a sense of wanting to save someone or something. So what is that? What is it that we want to save then? Okay. Other questions? We only have another minute or so, so we'll just take questions. Yeah, Peter.
So this is a little bit related to what was in the chat earlier. I have this sense that at its root, in many ways, people think that awareness itself is the self. Now, although the qualities of awareness change and it sort of disappears when we go to sleep or if we're unconscious, but then it comes back and, oh, that's me. And anyway, that's...
Yeah, it's a very strong It's a very strong kind of sense. And it's not even so much awareness itself, it's consciousness. You know, it's you know, the mindfulness, it's pretty clear mindfulness comes and goes, but there's this sense that something's been like staying aware. So that's a big one. And that's, I have a whole like whole section on that that I'd like to get to at some point. So yeah, Jill.
I think what Peter said was what I was thinking. So thank you, Peter. So something about the consciousness, like really deep under.
Yeah, there's some very deep things that we attribute to be self, you know, and you know, so but it's useful to just start with what's most obvious too, you know, like you know, it's like trying to get down to that one at first versus, you know, when it becomes really obvious. And so one thing that can be fun to do is to just kind of take stock during, maybe just during this week at times, take stock of when it feels like I'm here, you know, and what is it? What is it that I am in that moment? You know, just kind of be curious about that this week. You know, what is it that I am in that moment when it feels really strong? I am the one who's right. Or, you know, that's a lot when that comes up. I'm like, yeah, I am the one who's right. Or, you know, yeah, just various things. Or I'm the one who is being dismissed. Or yeah, so what is it, where does it feel strong, you know, when what does it come up? And that's a place to begin to be curious about it, not try to get rid of it, but like, wow, what's that about, what's going on? So we'll continue, and it'll be in 2 weeks we'll come back, because I'm teaching the retreat next week, so we'll continue this then.